It's the Bob Roberts Society Band, playing every Sunday at the Orange Grove Stand. They don't play grunge and they don't play loud. It's the magic of the music that still draws a crowd. Well, the word goes.
The magic of citrus. Talking citrus here today with Mr. Greg Peterson of the Urban Farm. Greg, you had a couple more comments you wanted to add to my strategy of pruning.
Pruning, yeah. So with citrus, you basically want to keep them the size and shape that you want them. So there's two things to do. And citrus notoriously have branches die back. If you have a citrus tree, you have branches that have died back. They just do that. It's part of their growth process.
Okay.
So step one is prune out the dead. Step two is make it the size and shape that you want it. If you have one that's way too big and you want to prune it back, do it over the course of about 3 years and prune it back about 20% a year until it's smaller. It will recover very nicely. Remember those two citrus trees that I have? They're 100 years old on my back.
Okay.
You know, on my back 40 at the Urban Farm. About 15 years ago, they looked like they had pretty much died. And so I went in there with my little chainsaw, and you know, citrus is really hard, and you know, the stump on these things is a good 18 inches, so it's huge. So I went in there with my little chainsaw and did what I could, and then I was going to call my tree guy to come in and take the stumps out. That didn't happen, and before long, these sprouted again. I have these two stumps in the back of the yard that sprouted into brand new trees. So, you know, just keep them the size and shape that you want them.
And they came back as Arizona sweets?
And they came back as Arizona sweets, absolutely.
My mother's got a citrus tree in her yard. I think it started as a lime, and now it's something else.
Yeah, well, that's the rootstock taking over. Yeah.
Well, let's get to some of the questions before we go on with our care, loving care of your citrus. We've got Mary Lou calling from Tucson. Let's bring Mary Lou in, introduce her to Mr. Greg. Mary Lou, how can we help you this morning in Tucson?
Well, good morning to all of you. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I heard you speaking of pomegranates. I have one that was being watered while I was gone for several weeks, and it almost died. They overwatered. And I was wondering, when it drops its leaves, which it's trying to do now, how far back can I prune it?
Oh, okay. Well, as Rosie found out, you can prune it back all the way to the ground, and it'll come back. Yeah. It is deciduous, so it does drop its leaves starting this time of year. Pomegranates can get really big. I had a friend 25 years ago who had a two-story pomegranate in his backyard that he'd cut a door in on the first story and cleaned out the middle so he had a fort for his kids. So they can get really big if you let them. And they're immune to mispruning. You can prune away and make it. So
they sure seem to be.
Yeah. My advice to you is make it the size and shape that you want it.
There you go, Mary Lou. We appreciate the call from Tucson. Enjoy the pomegranate. Is it pomegranate or pomegranate?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Let's go to Roland calling from Queen Creek.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, my friend.
Hey, I've got an area on the east side of my house that we use as a dog run, and we planted. It was doing well. It was about 15 feet tall, just starting to give shade. That wind we had early in the spring broke that thing off right in the middle. I was wondering if you had a suggestion for another type of tree.
And I'm sorry, Roland, what was the tree that was there?
A bottle brush.
Okay, bottle brush. Okay. All right, so we're in a narrow area.
Yep.
Off the side of the house. As a contractor builder, I would encourage him not to plant any tree within about 3 to 5 feet of the house.
Exactly.
Move it out away from the foundation.
Yep.
Now, with that said, The floor is yours. What would you put?
Well, and the other problem we have is if we put what I would like to put in there, which would be a native mesquite tree, because they grow fast, they provide nice shade. They also have roots that can do some damage. So, you know, it's just know that in 10 or 20 years, it might if you plant it close to the fence, it might jack up the fence.
So and a mesquite's hard to control into a narrow confine.
Actually, it's not.
Okay.
The single trunk, you just grow them out as a single trunk. So they can be bushes, which means you leave the lower branches on, or they can be trees, which means you remove the lower branches and just let it grow straight up. So you can grow them out like an umbrella in your space, provide lots of shade.
Well, I do love that. They will grow quick, and it will restore his shade fairly quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Roland, I hope that helps. Okay, diving back into the topic of citrus, which is our topic of the hour, where are we in this conversation?
Well, what I really want to get to is this notion of killing your fruit trees. As you can imagine,
Notion or the habit or the tendency?
Or the accident?
Yeah, all of them. All of them, exactly. I have my fruit tree education program. I started it 22 years ago. I've actually been growing fruit trees here in the valley since 1975.
Okay.
And I've discovered a lot over the years. And there are very specific things that people do that end up killing their fruit trees. And about 99% of the time, if somebody sends me a picture at fruittrees@urbanfarm.org and says, what's going on with my tree?
Yeah.
One of these three things is going on.
Okay.
They either planted them in a lawn, they planted them in a very hot microclimate, which is gravel and concrete and block walls.
Decomposed granite nude yard.
Exactly. Or they've got them on a drip system.
Okay.
Now, I have solutions for all three of those. So if that's what you have, if that's the space that you have, we have solutions in our education program. But don't do that. You know, don't put your trees in a place where, you know, you're going to cook them. With a hot microclimate, basically what I tell people to do, and this is gravel yards, dirt yards, block walls, that kind of stuff, go stand there in August for 15 minutes in the afternoon and say,
barefoot.
Barefoot, exactly. Barefoot, would I like to live here? Your trees aren't going to like it. Or in a lawn. What invariably happens in lawns is the Bermuda outcompetes the tree.
The roots of the Bermuda?
Yep, exactly.
Down there drinking up all the...
Yep. Nutrients and water and that kind of stuff. You bet. So in both cases, I have a solution in our education program. Basically, my solution is what's called the 6-6 rule. 6 inches deep, 6-foot diameter basin around the tree. And that's the starter for making sure that you don't, you know, that the Bermuda grass doesn't outcompete or you don't cook your tree. And what you do in that basin is once the tree is planted, you put 6 inches of woody mulch. And that woody mulch acts as a buffer. It acts as a buffer from the sprinkler water in your lawn. It acts as a heat buffer. It acts as a sponge, so it holds water. And it very quickly starts breaking down into amazing soil. If you're going to plant trees in a lawn, put your disc in, you know, 6 inches deep, 6-foot diameter. Plant your tree. Put your woody mulch in. The tree gets established. And in 2 years, the lawn grows back and you're golden.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So you're not having to fight the tree well to keep and maintain it.
You're not.
Just give it a good start.
You just give it a good start. Okay. Exactly. So that's number one. Number two is, if at all possible, never put your tree on drip.
Okay.
I can't tell you how many pictures I've gotten of a drip emitter right next to the trunk of a tree. It's a gallon per hour. They turn it on for a half hour every morning. And that waters a 6-inch square space around the tree and ignores all the rest of it. We do have a product on our shopping cart called our drip ring. And you can find out about that at fruittrees.org. And the drip ring has 18 emitters, half gallon per hour, puts out 9 gallons per hour. That's enough. You know, you run it for 3 or 4 hours once a week, and that fills up, saturates the basin around the tree.
And is that one more important thing about planting a tree to make sure you don't plant it too deep?
Oh,
that's
huge.
A real tendency, right? Like, I'm only going to protect this and bring it way down in here, and that's not
right.
That's not good.
Yeah. So what we suggest people do is they put them on a mound. So we're putting this basin around the tree. You want to put the tree on a mound in the middle, and you plant it to the same level that it's planted in the pot that you're getting it in. You never want to have woody mulch up against the trunk of the tree. So if you're putting this, when you're putting your 6 foot diameter basin around, you put the tree on a mound in the middle so that the woody mulch is a moat around it.
Very good.
And then when you're planting your tree, that's very important as well. Planting in native soil, and this goes for not just fruit trees, this goes for any tree. If you just dig a hole, drop a tree in, walk away, good luck. There's a 80-20 chance that it's not going to make it. 80% chance it's not going to make it. You have to supplement the soil. You mentioned earlier about growing healthy soil. Our job as growers of anything, especially in the desert, is to grow healthy soil. There's five components of healthy soil. Dirt, which is what you have. Airspace, water, organic matter, and
which we don't have,
and everything that's alive in the soil, which we don't have. The solution is add lots of organic matter, woody mulch in the basin around the tree. When you dig your hole, take 50% of the dirt out of the hole, put it in the wheelbarrow. Take 50% of Farmer Greg's planting mix or some other kind of planting mix and put it in the wheelbarrow, mix it up. We're going to add 2 pounds of azomite, which is a micronutrient mineral for your tree, 2 pounds of worm castings, worm poop, which is gardener's gold, and two ounces of mycorrhizae. Mix that all up in the wheelbarrow and plant the tree with that. That really gives your tree a huge limb up in success moving down the road.
Did you catch that? A limb up.
A limb up. A limb I got up. It. Let's see if we can bring Corey on into the conversation.
All right.
Miss Corey on.
Go ahead, Miss Corion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
All good.
I'm
hello.
Calling. Thank you. My name's Ginger. I have a new patio that was just put down of pavers, and I'm going to put pots on it and put a plant in each pot. And it's right around a pool. And I told the person who answered the phone that I kill everything. And so I want something that will be on a drip system that won't die right away, that I can easily take care of and wouldn't have a lot of debris going into the pool.
There's something for Rosie's. That's Rosie's experience right there.
Yeah. All right. An easy to maintain, easy to grow potted plant near a pool. Your recommendation, Greg?
I got nothing. In a pot?
What? You're not a fan of pots.
I'm not a fan of pots. They cook.
It's
so
too maintenance, too high.
Well,
high maintenance.
So here's what we do with pots at the Urban Farm. We actually grow vegetables, and we grow them seasonally because they don't work in the summer. The problem with pots is whatever's in that pot in the summertime, you're going to cook it. So we retire our pots for the summer, and in the fall, winter, and spring, we grow vegetables in them.
Very well said. Because I have tried and tried, and I think the pot mindset is you put something in, it's going to last.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
No.
And you're always having to replant.
Yeah.
I love seasonal flowers, but I hadn't thought about the vegetable part.
And what's the easiest thing to grow that's expensive in the store? Could you put that in a plant too as well?
Oh, yeah. Herbs.
Herbs.
Mm, that's so expensive in the store. $5 for a little
I love it that you listen, Gary.
Yeah.
I know.
I wish I could practice what I preach.
And I know... I have a couple associates, clients, who've actually put their pots on rolling casters.
There you go.
And they'll actually move them into the patio protected area, and it's in the worst, hottest, driest time of year.
Yeah.
And that seems to help a little bit, I guess.
Buy you some time anyway.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing about pots is every time you flush water through it, you're flushing the nutrients out. So they have to be fertilized more often.
So anything with a pot is going to be a little bit high maintenance. Don't think you can plant something one time and let it go, unless maybe you like agave, but throw a succulent in there. And
that might work.
But that's not good next to a pool.
Watering's kind of an issue, too. You'd either have to put it on an automatic
drip, timer,
or be there every day to water them.
Yeah, exactly. They would need to be watered every day, especially in the summertime.
All right. So I hope that helps give you a few ideas. I think the herbs are good because you plant them, you water them, you care for them, you get something out of the deal.
You eat them.
And you regularly are replenishing whatever it is that you got going in there.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Hard to beat, I think. All right, let's take us back to citrus. We've talked about the pruning. We've talked about how to kill them, How do we thrive them?
How do we thrive them?
Hey, let's save that for the break.
And we're going to want to cover that right when we get back.
Excellent.